From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. There have been a lot of complaints about the media during this election cycle, and we wonder if those complaints are justified. Is the news media biased? We want your opinions about journalism and objectivity all this hour. Here are your first thoughts. Santos, who goes by Type Vega on Twitter, says, "Did you mean neutral instead of objective? I expect journalists to be objective by fact-checking. One and the same." Edward Austin Hall agrees. He tweets, "The notion of journalistic objectivity is the noblest of aspirational myths. Nonetheless, that's the prize we need to eye always." And Paul Camp sent us an email. He writes, "What we need from journalists is not balance. To me, objectivity means allegiance to the truth, not to balance. It may be difficult sometimes to find the truth, but we expect you to try for that above all. We don't have time to make those kind of judgments. This means that fact-checking is objectivity. Balance is not." PBS NewsHour co-anchor Judy Woodruff has moderated a number of debates at the national level. She says debates have become more heated over time.
I would also say that the general election debates have been more respectful exchanges. There's certainly discourse, debate, disagreement, but in general, they're more respectful than the primary debates have been.
We'll hear more from Woodruff later, and we always want to know what you think. We expect to hear from you. Call us at 404-500-9457 with your thoughts. Has the news media done a good job covering this election? You can also tweet us at OST Talk or post to Facebook, and we might feature your comments on the show. Well, I think it's fair to say that we have never seen a presidential race quite like this one. Objectively speaking, while the candidates are under plenty of scrutiny, so is the media this year. A question that's come up in coverage of the Trump-Clinton face-off is whether traditional standards of journalism apply. Are reporters expected to show objectivity? We've invited a number of experts to consider that question. We have Hank Klibanoff. He teaches at Emory University. He's the author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Race Beat. Welcome back, Hank.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Carolyn Carson is a longtime reporter and editor with the Associated Press, now teaches at Kennesaw State University. Good to have you, Carolyn.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Rodney Carmichael joins us over the phone. Rodney's a senior staff writer with Creative Loafing in Atlanta. Hi, Rodney.
Hey, Celeste. Thanks for having me.
And Dan Wisenhunt is the editor of Decaturish.com. He's also a board member of the Georgia chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists. Hi there again, Dan.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So rather than having us all of us sit down and talk about things theoretically and philosophically, I thought the better way to do that is to bring up some of the criticisms that have been laid against the media during this entire election cycle and sort of take these real-world examples. So let's start with this criticism of the media that it's given Trump too much publicity, and there's kind of a staggering staggering number in relation to that, which is that Donald Trump ended up getting what's been valued at $2 billion in free media over the course of his campaign, which is more than six times as much as that of his closest Republican rival. So, Hank, what do you make of this particular criticism?
Well, I think there's validity to it. I think if you go back particularly to the Republican primary, most of the time when you could turn on one of the particularly cable news networks, you would see Trump giving a speech and you would see the network giving his full speech. You could hardly get 2 minutes of a Jeb Bush or, you know, of a Bobby Jindal or Lindsey Graham or any of the others, Rubio. And I think that the network leaders decided this is hot stuff. And I'm talking about the cable news networks in particular. This is hot, and it sort of led to the impression that the more outrageous you are on the campaign trail, the more likely you're going to get wall-to-wall coverage. And it did, I think, in the end, tilt in his favor.
Rodney, I wonder if you think, I mean, one of the defenses that some network executives especially have given is that they're required to make a profit. And so they went with the stories that were most likely to up the number of viewers. What do you think of this whole criticism of free media?
Well, I mean, I think that the profit margin has definitely been the overriding factor in the way media has covered the campaign this year. I mean, I think if we really look at the cable news format in particular, it's really taken its lead from reality TV, which, you know, plays good for Trump. It's all about squaring pundits across from each other so that they argue and there's really a lot less attention paid to fact or even objectivity. I think it's a very false sense of objectivity that they try to hold up.
Carolyn, has that held up now that once the primaries were over and Donald Trump became the nominee? Do you still think that news media was giving Trump an outsized measure of media coverage?
I do. First of all, Hillary Clinton has caused part of this because she is averse to having news conferences. And so she has not put herself out there for as much coverage as Donald Trump has. He's much more in the face of the media than she is.
That could have been strategic because he kept...
shooting himself in the foot when he did get in front of the media. So I think in a way she's just letting him do that. But that's also added to the fact that the media is spending more time with him than with her. Also the issue is the media is having to correct so much of what he's doing, what he's saying.
Fact-checking
and then... telling the public, you know, what's true and what's not true, it takes more time to do that.
So, Dan, that brings us, when we mentioned fact-checking, this has been a very often mentioned complaint. And people have come forward and said they want journalists to do live fact-checking. They've even asked moderators of the debates to do live fact-checking. And CNN has taken this extraordinary step of using their Chyron at the bottom of the screen to fact-check while stories are happening. So where is the line between fact-checking and displaying bias?
I don't know that there is a line. I mean, I think that's a journalist's job is to fact check, period. And if it upsets some people, can't help that. I mean, the truth is the truth, and that's the biggest, highest priority for any journalist, I think, and it should always be the highest priority.
And yet we saw in the last debate that in some cases when Martha Raddatz, for example, was trying to fact check, it became an argument. People said she shouldn't have argued.
Well, those people are wrong. I don't know what else to say. I mean, that's her job. She was doing her job.
So, Hank, the issue of fact-checking us brings us to the idea of how you label things, which has also been come up quite a number of times. For example, NPR will not, in most cases, call something a lie that a candidate has said. Their justification is that in order to call it a lie, it not only has to be untrue, but you have to be able to show that the person knows it's untrue. Where do you fall on this particular debate?
Well, these are important distinctions. I mean, journalism is about words, and words matter in this case. And I appreciate that NPR is being that thoughtful about it and saying that there are distinctions here. And you know, we go through this all the time, whether the people who had to flee New Orleans after Katrina, were they refugees or, you know.
That's a very difficult debate because in some cases you can see that the news media would label white people saying they found supplies and then they would see people of color and they would call them looters. So in some cases that has been a correct complaint against the media.
Well, absolutely. And I hope that what you're seeing, for example, with NPR, is a thoughtful response to that, to say let's parse these words very closely and select them wisely. And I think that's what they're trying to do. You know, there's a whole nother level of coarseness to the language that's new and that's been introduced into this election that we haven't seen before. But I also have to say it's not the first time, of course, that news media have been targeted by candidates. I mean, Spiro Agnew was pretty serious when he called journalists nattering nabobs of negativity, you know, and they've been under news organization been under attack a long time for this.
We are talking about the role of objectivity in journalism. My guests are Emory University Professor Hank Klibanoff, Kennesaw State University Professor Carolyn Carlson, Creative Loafing reporter Rodney Carmichael, and Decaturish.com editor Dan Wisenhunt. Let's actually hear, because I want to talk about newspaper endorsements. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution stopped endorsing candidates years ago, and in 2012, AGC editor Kevin Riley explained why.
Readers live in a media world where they're shouted at by talk radio, they're harangued by partisan network news. Even on Facebook, their friends are bugging them about their opinions on candidates. When they pick up their newspaper, what they want is a thoughtful, insightful experience that helps them make their decisions.
So, Carolyn, how do you... You're smiling already. What do you make of this argument over newspaper endorsements and whether they matter?
Well, I think newspapers have traditionally endorsed candidates, and I don't see any reason why they can't continue to do that if their editorial boards feel that's what they want to do. I think the public expects that from the people at the newspaper whose job it is to express their opinion.
Rodney, did you want to weigh on this particular thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to the profit margin argument, you know, which, you know, for the AJC, they decided that they were alienating too much of their subscriber base, you know. So it was something just like that choice was made to appeal to a wider readership. The same choice is being made in broadcast media, you know, to attempt to appeal and attract more viewers. It's not really about any kind of journalistic ideal as much as it is a business ideal.
All right, let's hear from journalist Glenn Greenwald of The Intercept. He spoke with my colleague Adam Ragusea by Skype for the podcast The Pub. And here he is saying that our idea, or I guess the position of journalists, has changed.
This voice that people at NPR and PBS and CNN are required to assume, where they're supposed to display this kind of non-human neutrality about the world on which they're reporting, is a deceitful, artificial one. And I think it's much better to have viewers and readers know the perspective from which people are reporting, rather than trying to deceive them into believing that there are none.
Dan, what do you think about this? Is the attempt to appear objective and balanced, is that deceitful in some cases?
No, I mean, objectivity is just a way of framing a problem. It's how you look at something. Nobody is objective. It's not something you're born with, like you're born with eye color. It's just a way that you approach and look at a problem. I don't think it's deceitful to try to be fair to someone, but I also think that, again, as a journalist, your highest priority is to the truth. And if you're telling the truth and somebody thinks that's unfair, you know, all you can say is, well, it's the truth. That's it. That's all you can do. And as long as you're telling the truth and making that your priority, I think the rest will sort of take care of itself.
We have about a minute. Rodney, Hank, you wanted to add on to
this. I just wanted to say it's worth noting that objectivity has not been in the Society of Professional Journalists Code of Ethics for 20 years.
That
they took
correct.
That word out, and they replaced it with fairness and with accuracy. And because what objectivity got us was Joe McCarthy. It got us neutered news coverage. It got us stenographic news coverage. It didn't enlighten anyone.
We are going to start with Joe McCarthy when we return. We are talking about objectivity, neutrality, fairness, and balance in journalism. And we definitely want to hear your responses. You just heard Emory University Professor Hank Klibanoff. We also have Karen Carlson of Kennesaw State University with us, Creative Loafing reporter Rodney Carmichael, and Decaturish.com editor Dan Wisenhunt. We'll continue this in just a moment. This is On Second Thought. We're spending a good chunk of today's show looking at the role of objectivity and fairness in journalism. That's been raised a lot during this year's presidential race. In fact, Donald Trump has in recent days suggested that the media might be rigging the election against him if he loses. Here for that conversation, four journalists: Emory University Professor Hank Klibanoff, Kennesaw State University Professor Carolyn Carlson, Creative Loafing reporter Rodney Carmichael, and Decaturish.com editor Dan Wisenhunt. Since Hank mentioned Joe McCarthy, I should mention that for decades now, the public opinion of journalists has been pretty low. That's not a recent thing that the public has had. Maybe 20-30% of the public has thought that journalists are unbiased and fair. So let's go back to the hearings back in 1954. This is where Joe McCarthy accused a young lawyer of being a communist. That lawyer was working for attorney Joseph Welch. And during the hearing, Welch replied here to Senator McCarthy.
Senator, may we not drop this? Let us not assassinate this lad further, Senator.
Well, let's
You've done enough. Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you left no sense of decency?
So, that's important and obviously iconic, but even more important for our discussion is the comments later from CBS host Edward R. Murrow. He reacted to Welch's comments by calling out Joseph McCarthy for his tactics.
No one familiar with the history of his country can deny that congressional committees are useful. It is necessary to investigate before legislating. But the line between investigating and persecuting is a very fine one, and the junior senator from Wisconsin has stepped over it repeatedly.
So, Rodney, was that Edward R. Murrow giving his opinion?
That's a good question. I think that in that case he was making a judgment call based on the facts as he saw them. I mean, and you know, kind of just to go back to what we were talking about before the break, I think that in a lot of ways this whole idea of objectivity or, you know, unbiased journalism or fairness or whatever we're calling it now, it's an illusion, you know. And I think unless you're able to recognize, which has always been the journalistic ideal, unless you're able to recognize your own inherent biases, you know, and the biases that are built into the institution of journalism, just like they're present in institutions like criminal justice and housing and whatever other institutions we're starting to criticize now, we have to be able to be subjective enough and transparent enough to recognize our own inherent biases before we can ever try to live up to some false, fair equation.
Okay, then let me play another clip and see what you guys think of this particular one. This is journalist Walter Cronkite on CBS giving his thoughts on the Vietnam War. This is an excerpt from a 1968 broadcast.
To say that we are closer to victory today is to believe, in the face of the evidence, the optimists who have been wrong in the past. But it is increasingly clear to this report that the only rational way out then will be to negotiate, not as victors, but as an honorable people who lived up to their pledge to defend democracy and did the best they could.
So, Dan, is that Cronkite stepping away from his journalistic ethics and giving his opinion?
Well, I don't know that he's stepping away from his ethics. That is giving his opinion, but sometimes that's what the moment calls for. You can't always just sit back and let people speak for themselves. Sometimes it's your job to step in and provide that context for people and to connect the dots for people. And people like Cronkite and Murrow were stepping up when the moment demanded it. And when those moments appear, I think we shouldn't be afraid to do that.
May I add that both Cronkite and Murrow were saying that in the context of having been reporting the story. Murrow did an entire, you know, hour on Joe McCarthy, and he was, you know, he was late with it. I mean, he was doing it because no one else was, and so he's basing that viewpoint on having, you know, done immersive reporting on the subject. Same with Cronkite. This is the first and only time he expressed his opinion, but it's after he went to Vietnam, and he did some deep reporting, and he met with not just the generals, but the grunts in the field, and came out of it with a point of view, more than an opinion, I would say, that he felt it was important to share in the context of all the reporting he did.
I think a part of the problem that we have, especially in current times, is that there is confusion over different people's roles in the news media. So those of us who are in this profession, we know the difference between, say, a correspondent and a reporter. We know the difference between a reporter and a commentator or a pundit. But Carolyn, how do you explain, do you think that the general news consumer knows the difference between when a pundit gets on and gives their opinion and when a reporter comes on and reports facts?
No, I don't think they do. I think it has to be clearly labeled. One of the components of the SPJ Code of Ethics says that opinion and commentary needs to be clearly labeled, and I don't think it always is.
We think it is, though. I mean, let me play a comment that's, well, I guess a moment that refers to this. This is Cokie Roberts. She's a commentator for NPR. Before Donald Trump became the Republican nominee, she wrote an article with her husband saying Trump should not be the nominee. She was criticized for that. Many people think of her as a journalist. She has not been a working journalist for more than 20 years. But here's Morning Edition host David Greene asking, can you blame people? Can you blame me for being disappointed in you because you're not objective here?
Yes, I can blame you for being a little disappointed because I think it is a different role. If I were doing it in your role, you should be disappointed. Or if I were doing it covering Capitol Hill every day, I can't imagine doing that. But the truth is, this is a different role. And there are times in our history when you might be disappointed if I didn't take a position like that.
Which kind of reflects what Dan just said. Rodney, do you have we not, if we in the news media not made it clear what all these different roles, when someone's job is to give their opinion as opposed to report on facts?
Yeah, well, like it's already been said, I definitely think there's a lack of clarity in terms of that. And I think, honestly, that a lot of these media organizations prefer it that way. I mean, some of them pay pundits to come on TV and argue and, you know, and make that the news. That becomes the news, this argument that takes place between paid pundits. So, you know, again, I think it all goes back down to dollar signs.
Dan, do you think that part of people's confusion or one of the reasons people think of the news media as biased is because they're mixing up op-eds with reporting?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, my opinion is that Fox News is a big part of the reason there's that confusion now. You know, when it started back in the 90s, you know, they made a very intentional point of mixing up the punditry and the reporting. And I think you've seen...
Right, but they have labeled that as entertainment as opposed...
Well, they can use that cop-out if they want to, but the effect that it's had is it's pushed other news networks trying to beat them in the ratings to do the same thing. MSNBC has sort of become the left-wing alternative to Fox News, and CNN has done a lot more mixing up of pundits and news commentators. So I think Fox News in particular has blurred the lines and has done so for years and has made it harder for people to make those distinctions in their own minds.
I want to read a couple of responses from listeners, and we do want to hear from all of you, so weigh in on this topic. Mark Vanderhoek writes, the media hasn't handled Trump well. They helped fuel his rise by showcasing his horrible comments he should have been ignored. And Rabbit tweets, if a referee never calls fouls they see, they're not very good referees, especially if one team is whining there shouldn't be refs. We are talking about the role of objectivity and fairness in journalism. My guests are, you just heard, Dan Wisenhunt of Decaturish.com. We also have Rodney Carmichael of Creative Loafing, Carolyn Carlson of Kennesaw State University, and Hank Klibanoff of Emory University. So this brings us, Hank, to this problem with what is a fact? We are now living in an era in which somebody like Martha Raddatz will say at a debate, this is the actual fact, this is what's proven, and people still feel as though that's spin. How did we get here?
Well, I think it goes back to the previous question you were asking. I think that we have had such a decline in what I would call education in civics.
We removed civics,
right. And there's news illiteracy that is rampant, and we don't teach enough news literacy. News organizations are the worst at trying to educate their audiences as to what their point and purpose is and why it's not just, we don't do it just because it's tradition. I mean, journalism is a profession, and these are professionals. You can walk into any newsroom, and they are working night and day to try to get the facts right. And in some cases, it's easy to contradict a politician because you just put their words up against each other. And some, they're more difficult. It was difficult to prove there were no weapons of mass destruction. No organization had the resources to send 25 reporters looking for weapons of mass destruction. These things take time. Over time, you hope, you know, the news media does the job it's supposed to do, but it does take time.
Well, then let me ask you about this, Carolyn, because you teach journalism as Hank does. We have now a whole slew of different kind of quote-unquote journalists. You've got citizen journalists who perhaps have a point of view and are not adhering to the Society of Professional Journalist Ethics. You have bloggers who some people think are journalists. Should there be a card-carrying journalist saying, I adhere to this set of ethics?
Well, you can't really define journalists that clearly. Bloggers can be journalists or they cannot be journalists. It depends on their purpose and what they're doing.
What, is it just buyer beware? How is a consumer supposed to know?
I don't know. It depends on what the topic is that they're reading. Because a blogger can be covered by the Shield Law, for instance, depending on what they're reporting on. So it's hard to define a journalist.
Yeah, I want to say this is just personally irritating to me. I see all these quote-unquote news articles that get shared on social media and Facebook, and you go and check it, and you realize that this is just made up. I think, one of the things that people have forgotten to do, especially when it comes to being savvy news consumers, is looking at, most legit websites like Decaturish will have an about page, and it'll explain how to contact the author. It'll explain where the business is located. It'll explain what their corrections policy is. A lot of times people are just looking at all news organizations as equals and taking them at face value, and they're not actually taking a few more steps to say, okay, I'm seeing this crazy article on this website I've never heard of. Is CNN reporting it? Is Fox News even reporting it? Is the New York Times reporting it? I think that people need to learn how to tell the difference between what is real
news. You
mean
consumers need to tell the difference.
Consumers need to learn to tell the difference. And it is our job as media professionals to do a better job of educating them about that.
So before we end this conversation, Ronnie, let me bring this back to where we started, which is all these complaints about the media during this particular election cycle. There's an op-ed in the New York Times, in the LA Times, excuse me, from Jason Raimondo. He is a conservative, very open about that. But let me read his quote. He says, "The media has long been accused of having a liberal slant. In this cycle, journalists seem to have cast themselves as defenders of the republic against what they see as a major threat. And in playing this role, they've lost the ability to assess events rationally." What do you make of people's complaints that journalists have identified, in this case, Donald Trump, as a threat to the republic?
I mean, I don't know if I've seen enough of that. I'm not sure what media sources he's been reading. I think, like we've been saying this whole conversation, this false ideal of objectivity has, it used to be a journalist's job to put things in context, to draw conclusions, to take the facts and translate them for readers. And it's like everybody feels like they have to be handcuffed, and somehow now the ideal is and it's, I can't even say it's to present the facts because that happens so rarely, but I think a lot of Trump's rise has to do with the fact that journalism has kind of lost its guts when it comes to not only just reporting the facts, but translating them for people.
We have a quote from Amanda Respis, who says, "A lot of journalists are bloggers, but very few bloggers are journalists, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, consumers need to vet their news sources." And Philo Math says, "Citizen journalists and bloggers are very unreliable, and what they report should be taken with a grain of salt." And mm-hmm. Hank, this idea of balance is another thing that has come under fire in this particular election cycle. The fact that this attempt to turn everything into a he said, she said, creates a distorted picture.
I think it does, and I think that some news organizations, I think, will respond by going overboard. I think that they will measure out how many lines they're going to give Obama and how many lines they're going to, or Clinton, how many lines they're going to give Trump in a front page story, the little boldface readouts, they're going to try to measure those to be exact number of words, and it becomes formulaic, and it's not applying subjective professional judgments about what is news and what is not news. If you look back, and I love my old paper, the AJC, but even they've had to go back and review their coverage of the first Romney Obama debate when clearly Romney won. He steamrolled Obama in the first debate going back 4 years ago. And the headline the next day was Obama, Romney spar over issues or something like that. And they had the equal amount on either side. And you realize that was not a true reflection of what went on. So they were bending over backwards to try to be fair, but what they weren't being was accurate.
We only have about 30 seconds left, but Rodney, I heard you make a sound when Hank was talking about that. Should the headline have declared who won?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair call to make if it's clear. I mean, that's the whole point. Why are we pretending like? Yeah, I mean, it's becoming just a ridiculous farce where you can't draw conclusions based on the facts, and I'm not sure what world we're living in, what kind of reality we're living in, if that's the case.
Sadly, we'll have to end that there, and not knowing what world we're living in. Creative Loafing reporter Rodney Carmichael, Emory University professor Hank Klibanoff, Kennesaw State University professor Carolyn Carlson, and Decaturish.com editor Dan Wisenhunt. Thanks so much to all four of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Many prominent journalists got their start in Georgia, among them Judy Woodruff. She launched her career here at WAGA-TV, which is now Fox 5. Now she's, of course, the co-anchor and managing editor of the PBS NewsHour, and next month she will be inducted into the Atlanta Press Club Hall of Fame. Judy Woodruff joins me from Washington, D.C. Good morning.
Hello, Celeste.
Let's start in Atlanta, since you're about to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. And I wonder what kind of training you feel you got here in Atlanta, as opposed to having launched your career in New York or Los Angeles.
Well, the training was truly on the ground, because the first reporting assignment I was given when I was hired by the news director at WAGA, which was then a CBS affiliate, was to cover the Georgia State Legislature. So I headed over to the state capitol when I had been at WAGA all of, I think, 1 week. And this was after having been the newsroom secretary at WQXI, which was then the ABC affiliate. And I headed to the Capitol and started meeting members of the House and the Senate, and worked very closely with a cameraman, the late, great Leroy Powell, who was then with WAGA. And we worked our way through, and I stayed there for 5 years. And it was baptism by fire. I cannot imagine a better way to learn American politics than to learn it on the ground. Maybe City Hall, and I frankly did cover a little bit of Atlanta City Hall and City Council, but primarily it was the Georgia legislature, and these were folks from all over the state, obviously mostly Democrats back then, because we're talking 1970 through 1974, mostly Democrats, but there were some Republicans. But I can't imagine a better way to understand American politics than to start, right there.
And you clearly excelled, because you got a job with NBC News just a few years later. And tell me a little bit about that transition from being with a local affiliate and then moving to a national network. What changed?
It was a big change. I had been given a lot of leeway in Atlanta covering the state legislature. I would come back from the Capitol, and we pretty much were given our due. I mean, we were told, you come up with a story, you write it, you edit it, get it on the air. Once I was at NBC, I was reporting for the Today Show and NBC Nightly News, and everything was very tightly edited. Timing was right down to the millisecond. But I have to say, there was a wonderful editor at NBC, I'll never forget him, named Gil Milstein, who went over my copy with a fine-tooth comb. I thought I was a decent writer. But he reminded me that I was only, at that point, 6 or 7 years out of college, and that I had a lot to learn. And I have to say, I have to credit Gil with teaching me a lot about writing crisply and writing for television, making sure that what I wrote was matching the copy and that I was always grammatical and never made a mistake. I was taught that mistakes were deaf. But it was a transition. I obviously had learned a lot in Atlanta, but once I went to work for NBC, and by the way, I was still based in Atlanta for another 2 years because I was at NBC's Southeastern Bureau there. Even though I was on the road, I was traveling constantly for NBC. My home base was Atlanta.
And you covered the presidential campaign of then-Governor Jimmy Carter. So you're one of the best placed people in the country to sort of look back at what has changed in presidential campaigns between then, 1976, and 2016.
You can only imagine. I mean, because then we were making the transition from film to video. We were just beginning video. There were these big, bulky cameras. We still had to file our stories from TV stations. We would have to go to a bureau, an NBC bureau or an NBC affiliate TV station to file. We couldn't file from out in the field as today. You know, reporters can basically file from wherever they are. You set up a satellite, what they call flyaway system. And you're on the air. Not to mention, back then, I was filing for the morning news and the evening news. Today, reporters are filing all day long. I think, Celeste, what hasn't changed is the essentials of reporting. You know, make sure you've got your facts straight. Don't report anything unless you've got confirmation. Make sure it's balanced. The guts of journalism hasn't changed. What has changed are the technological demands. The fact that you're expected to report constantly now, you really don't have as much time as you once did to hone your copy and make sure it's very carefully written. Because today, there's so much of a premium today on reporting on the fly and on ad-libbing. You talk about the story rather than writing and crafting your piece. That's still done for the nightly news and for the Today Show, but look at where we are on cable. It's just a different world. And then you add to that social media. It's changed a lot. But I like to say, and I really do believe, the essentials of journalism have not changed.
My guest is Judy Woodruff. She's co-anchor and managing editor of the PBS NewsHour. She'll be inducted in the Atlanta Press Club Hall of Fame on November 29th. The thing is, though, Judy, that there's a lot of criticism that has changed in terms of fact-checking and confirmation. And we've had some really huge mistakes by major networks like CNN, in which they called a Supreme Court decision incorrectly, in which they have, not just CNN, but other networks, have actually identified people as suspects in major crimes, and it turns out those people were totally innocent. So people are constantly saying that we have lost some of the dedication and commitment that used to be involved in journalism in terms of getting two independent confirmations of facts and sources and things like that. Do you see that as having eroded?
Well, there's no question that the time, when you have to report constantly and when time becomes more important than anything else, when you're given literally seconds to turn around a report on a Supreme Court decision, you're asking for mistakes to be made. Reporters are not given the space and the time they need to check to make sure they've got it right. And I think sometimes we have leaned over too far in the direction of being first and put that ahead of being right. And I think that's when mistakes happen. I think, by and large, the media in general does a pretty amazing job of getting it right. It doesn't mean that the mistakes don't happen. They certainly do. But I think we're still at the point where there are few enough of them that, as you just said, we can point to what they were. It's not as if the media is reporting a steady stream of mistakes. I mean, having said that, one mistake is too many. We never want to make a mistake. You want to always get it right. But in my view, as we've in our pell-mell rush to be first always, and you've seen this particularly with cable and frankly with the internet and with online and social media, everybody wants to have the first tweet or the first online report or the first cable report. That's when mistakes happen. And so we have to be more careful than we've ever been before to check our sources, make sure it's right, check the facts, but at the same time recognize that sometimes mistakes are going to happen. We need to constantly remind our audience that when we're covering a breaking story, that we are in the middle of that story. that all the facts are not known yet. This is what we know at this point. And I think we have to do that. But you're absolutely right. There are mistakes. The Supreme Court call, that was a big one. And we can't afford to do that. Every time we do that, I think we erode our credibility.
You have a lot of experience moderating debates, going back to 1988 when Democrat Lloyd Benson was running as Michael Dukakis's running mate and made that now famous statement to Dan Quayle, "You're no Jack Kennedy." But let's listen to something from a debate that you did not moderate. This is from 1984 when Geraldine Ferraro was running as vice president and faced off against Vice President George H.W. Bush, who was running for re-election with Ronald Reagan.
Let me help you with the difference, Ms. Ferraro, between Iran and the embassy in Lebanon. Iran, we were held by a foreign government. In Lebanon, you had a wanton terrorist action where the government opposed it.
Congresswoman Ferraro.
Let me just say, first of all, that I almost resent, Vice President Bush, your patronizing attitude that you have to teach me about foreign policy.
So a couple of questions about what we just heard. I think probably in our current state of affairs, a candidate probably would have jumped in sooner without waiting for the moderator to give permission. And so do you think debates have become, in general, less civil?
Absolutely. But I would also say that the general election debates have been more respectful exchanges. There's certainly discourse, debate, disagreement, but in general, they're more respectful than the primary debates have been. Now, this year, 2016, I think
that's not,
you see...
It's not a really high bar to meet, though, Judy.
well, you know, that's in the eye of the beholder. I would say 2016... All bets are off. We've never seen anything mm-hmm. like the debates this year, where you had constant interruptions. We hadn't seen anything like what we're seeing this year before. And you know, you could say that has to do with who the candidates are and how fiercely, or who the nominees are, and just how fiercely fought this election is.
So this hour, we're focusing on this huge debate, and it's. There's a bunch of facets to it in terms of journalistic objectivity. And one of the things that's come up in the debates especially is people asking journalists to fact check in real time. That's something journalists have often not done in the past. They've just allowed candidates to make statements and let the audience decide. Where do you come down on this? Should journalists be fact checking people?
Do you mean the journalists who are moderating the
Correct.
Debate? Or do you mean other journalists? Well, as someone who's moderated a debate before, I have to say, I think that's a very difficult territory to get into, because once you start doing that, then you are obligated to fact check on everything, and that, of course, is impossible. So I think, in my view, I think what the very least that moderators can do is to turn to the other candidate or the other nominee and say, you know, Secretary Clinton or Mr. Trump, you just heard, you know, Secretary Clinton or Donald Trump say X, Y, and Z. You know, how do you respond to that? Is that your understanding of that? I think unless something is just a flat out untruth, if somebody says, you know, the earth is flat or the sky is green, you know, that everybody knows to be wrong. Otherwise, you get, because then you if you correct one, then why aren't you correcting the other one? You know, why aren't you picking, it looks as if you're taking sides. And I think that's a very difficult area. I frankly think that the truth, or rather the fact checking, needs to come from the media and from voters and from the other candidates. Who are in the race. And by the way, I think voters have a responsibility here. I mean, what we have now is a media environment where, you know, everybody seems to have their own set of facts. And that's become a reality in the age of the internet and the age of opinion media, where one news organization reports one way and other news organizations report another way. Many voters listen only to one or watch only one side or another. We're in a pretty sticky wicket as far as I'm concerned. And I think we need to think about that as an American people together. How do we agree on a set of, or is there an agreed set of facts upon which we can make decisions. And if there's not, then we have real problems in governing this country. So, and I think it's something we need to talk more about in between elections.
Well, then last question for you. What is the discussion that comes after November 8th, and specifically among journalists? Because there has been so much criticism of journalists, some of it deserved, I think, some of it not deserved. Now we have Donald Trump accusing the media of possibly rigging the election. Some people said that we gave him too much free publicity with too much coverage. There has been all kinds of criticism of journalists and how they've approached their jobs during this election. What is the discussion among our profession on November 9th?
I think there's going to be plenty to talk about, not to mention the, you know, dealing with the results of the election, because at this point it looks as if whoever wins, there's going to be an extraordinary amount of either of anger, disappointment on the part of the Americans who voted the other way. Of course, the hope is that the country comes together after this election, that people accept the result, which Governor Pence, who is Donald Trump's running mate, says that he will. And last week, I interviewed Donald Trump's campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway. I asked her if Donald Trump were prepared to accept the results of the election, and she said, absolutely, we will accept the result. However, since then, Donald Trump has continued to talk about the election being rigged and talk about not just the news media, but election officials. And I think this is I think it's a troubling development in the election. And I think it's one that we, you know, in fact, on the NewsHour, it's one that we are looking at and talking about. But after the election, I think the news media is going to have conversations about how we covered this election, what is our responsibility, where did we fulfill that responsibility, where did we fall down? Because it's our credibility is so important. It's vital to the survival of our democracy, and I don't say that lightly. Our democracy depends on voter participation, and it depends on a free and unencumbered news media, and that means a news media that people can believe. And so we've got a lot of work to do. You know, we are so lucky to live in this amazing country, to live in this amazing democracy, system of government that we have, and to have the free press that we have in this country. So much of the rest of the world, most of the rest of the world doesn't have anything like this. So we are so blessed and so fortunate. But we have to work at it, and we have to make sure that it's working well for all Americans. So, you know, we have real conversations to have after this election.
Veteran journalist Judy Woodruff, co-anchor and managing editor of the PBS NewsHour. Next month, she will be honored at the Atlanta Press Club as a new member of the Hall of Fame. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
That's our show for today. But as always, we want you to weigh in. What do you think about objectivity in journalism? Can we expect journalists to be neutral? And how do you think the media has handled the candidates this election season? Call us at 404-500-9457. Leave us a message with your opinion. You can also tweet us, of course. I'm at Celeste Headley. The show is at OST Talk, or post to Facebook. For today, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. Have a great day.